So thank you very much for attending this this session. Thank you, Rihanna, for the introduction. So I'm very excited to present this paper, and I'd like to thank everyone involved in making this opportunity happen. So first of all, I'd like to say that we believe that this paper should be of interest to accounting standard setters as well as banking regulators, because it brings attention to an interesting interplay between an accounting standard, IFRS 9, and risk-based capital requirements. So let me give you a bit of an insight about this interplay. So in 2014, the ISB published the IFRS 9, which includes the expected credit loss model for estimating impairment losses, which replaces the IAS 39 incurred loss model. So IFRS 9 is effective from 2018 and require banks to recognize credit losses earlier. So we can see this on the graph. So the loan loss allowance is a function of the deterioration in credit quality of a financial asset. Under IAS 39, the loan loss allowance was built up when losses were incurred, while under IFRS 9, banks are required to cover potential loan losses upon initial loan recognition. Consequently, at day one, IFRS 9 was expected to result in an increase in the overall amount of loan loss provisioning to capture those expected losses for stage one and stage two financial assets, and which in many cases would reduce the capital adequacy ratio of banks, because loan impairment and is an expenses in the reporting period, and therefore it will decrease the equity component of the capital adequacy ratio. So the BCBS, so the Basel Committee for Banking Supervision, feared that IFRS 9 would create a capital shock that ultimately will detriment financial stability. So as a consequence, the Basel Committee for Banking Supervision introduced a capital transitional arrangement option policy that allows banks on a voluntary basis to neutralize the effect of IFRS 9 on regulatory capital. So broadly speaking, the authorized transitional adjustment under the CTA policy corresponds to the difference in required provision under IAS 39 and IFRS 9. So this transitional adjustment is added back to the equity component of the capital adequacy ratio. So this adjustment is phased out each year, allowing CTA adopters to absorb the day one capital impact of IFRS 9 adoption over a 5-year transitional period. There is one more thing that I want to highlight about this interplay, is that the denominator of the capital adequacy ratio is the risk-weighted asset, and banks are authorized to use two methods. So the standardized approach, where the risk-weighted asset is a function of the exposure at default and the risk weight, and there the risk weights are fixed. And they can also use the internal rating-based approach, but this approach is subject to regulatory approval. And here, the banks can estimate their own parameter using their own model, and the parameter of the exposure at default, the probability of default, and the loss given default. And we can see that there is a link with IFRS 9, where the expected losses, which will give rise to the loan loss allowance, is also a function of the same parameter. So we can say that in this framework, we have some banks out there that have some experience already with some advanced credit risk modeling method. So what we do in this paper, in a nutshell, so we evaluate banks' option to adopt the CTA set out by the Basel Committee for Banking Supervision in response to the introduction of IFRS 9. So we focus on two research questions, so the determinant factors that influence this choice and the consequences of this choice on bank risk-taking. So why is it important? Because one might fear that banks would opt for the CTA to delay compliance with the minimum regulatory capital requirements. So that would be the opportunistic view. So what we find here is that we find that regulatory capital constrained banks are more likely to opt for the CTA. Under this opportunistic view, these are the banks that are more likely to engage in an opportunistic behavior. However, we do report that this choice is independent of the risk weight reporting approach. So although there are banks that have experience with advanced credit risk modeling, it does not seem that some banks are more likely to want to neutralize the effect of IFRS 9 than others. We also report that CTA adopters decreased their exposure to systematic risk after the adoption of the CTA, and that this effect is more significant for banks operating where the banking authority holds more power. So this goes against a bit the opportunistic view. So we see a commitment of CTA adopters to decrease their exposure to this type of risk. So to have a bit of a background, so accounting for credit losses was blamed to fuel for having fueled the 2008-2009 financial crisis because it gives like untimely information about banks' credit risk. Indeed, under IS-39, banks were obliged to record impairment of financial asset conditional on the occurrence of an objective evidence of impairment. And this restriction was criticized as being too little too late. Now, as we saw on the graph, under IFRS 9, banks now stop waiting for this trigger event and estimate a buffer to cover potential loan losses upon initial loan recognition. So this might give rise to two potential adverse consequences. So first, at day one, so we expect a higher level of loan loss allowance, which might give rise to a capital shock and ultimately detriment financial stability. On the other hand, to estimate those expected losses, so it requires some managerial discretion because we need some private information to integrate forward-looking assumptions, forward-looking information into this estimation. And we know that managerial discretion might be used like in an opportunistic way. So the BCBS tend to address the first concern by introducing this CTA policy to ensure a stable transition from the old incurred loss model to the new IFRS 9 expected credit loss model by adding back this transitional adjustment to regulatory capital. So our research question again, why do banks opt for the CTA and what do banks do during the transitional adjustment period? A bit also about the bank institutional background, because we use a lot of acronyms here, and just to make sure that everyone is on the same page. So in 1988, the Basel I Accords introduced this capital adequacy ratio based on a framework that required banks to hold regulatory capital in proportion to risk-weight assets. So basically, the riskier the asset, the higher the level of regulatory capital that is required. But there was some issue with this framework, especially the risk weight were not sensitive enough to banks' economic risk, to market risk, and therefore in 2004 the Basel II framework introduced an alternative approach to measure the risk-weighted asset, namely the advanced approach, where banks can use their own estimate to measure the parameter to get the risk weights, the probability of default, the loss given default, and the exposure as default. In our paper, we also think that there are some institutional specificities that might play a role, and one of them is the single supervisory mechanism that has been created by the European Central Bank, were created by the European Central Bank in 2014, and where the ECB has direct supervisory power over some large European banks. So under this SSM framework, the ECB launched the targeted review of internal model, which aims to assess whether the internal models currently used by those significant banks comply with regulatory capital requirements. And it's important to note here that the ECB put a lot of economic resources into this TRIM project, and that it also leads to on-site investigation. So there are out there some regulatory scrutiny, regulatory pressure, or their internal model for some banks, for those like significant institutions. So for our first hypothesis, so we might expect an association between CTA adoption choice and the approach used by banks to estimate the risk-weighted assets. So first, we know that the IFRS 9 expected credit loss model is more aligned with prudential expected losses estimated under this advanced approach, so the IRB approach. We also expect that banks applying the IRB approach are more likely to have necessary regulatory capital resources, because under the IAS 39 framework, so the difference in expected losses measured under the IRB approach and the IAS 39 incurred loss model was deducted from regulatory capital. And also, we expect that IRB banks in our context have incentive to opt out of the CTA to avoid red flags, because the IRB approach under regulatory scrutiny, it must be approved by the banking supervisor. We believe that the banks have kind of an incentive to say, okay, we know how to use this method and we do it properly. However, the benefit for IRB banks of opting out of the CTA might be diluted by several aspects. So first, expected credit losses remain challenging to estimate for most banks. And if you look at the report from the TRIM project, we can see that there are some issues out there. And there are also some heterogeneity in regulatory scrutiny over the use of internal models. And I'm thinking about this like SSM TRIM project and the other banks that would apply the IRB approach, obviously. So we predict that banks that apply the IRB approach are not more likely to opt out of the CTA than banks applying the standardized approach. The second part of the hypothesis is based on the fact that banks manager behave often opportunistically. So we have plenty of evidence that bank manager exercise discretion over accounting provision to shore up their regulatory capital, that makes strategic choices in modeling credit risk under the IRB framework. So we know that usually this is the weekly capitalized bank, or what we call in the paper the regulatory constrained bank, that are more likely to engage in an opportunistic behavior. So it leads us to the second part of the first hypothesis. So regulatory constrained banks are more likely to opt for the CTA. Now, for the second research question. So if regulation on credit risk assessment failed to capture bank risk taking, banks have incentive to take risk that it will not take with tighter and more efficient regulation. So this argument leads to the opportunistic view, where we would predict that banks that select the CTA might take advantage of the transitional period to take more risk than it would be possible under a fully applied IFRS framework. And we have plenty of paper out there showing that banks engage in opportunistic behavior. But we have the counter argument here, the non-opportunistic view, where we would predict that banks that select the CTA might take advantage of the transitional period to decrease their risk taking. So here we predict that the choice of opting for the CTA has no impact on banks' risk taking. The final hypothesis is based on evidence that bank regulators might influence the operation of banks. So one argument is that a supervisor might lead to socially suboptimal arrangement because of their wish to generate private or political benefits. And we have some evidence there that greater official supervisory power might lead to higher systematic risk in the banking industry. On the other hand, stringent supervisory control can potentially prevent manager from engaging in excessive risk-taking behaviors. So under certain conditions, powerful supervisory authorities might reduce bank risk-taking. It might also reduce bank incentive or ability to opportunistically under-report the risk-weighted asset. And we have this last paper in Journal of Banking and Finance by Garcia Osma, where they show that more politically independent supervisors it moderates the earnings smoothing behavior in European banks. However, in our story here, we do believe that politics and supervisor have the same interest, namely financial stability. So there is no clash between the two. So finally, we predict that the power of the banking authority affects CTA adopters' risk taking. So regarding the research design, so we use yearly data from 2016 to 2019. So CTA policy and IFRS 9 are effective from 2018. So we begin with a sample of all the European public publicly listed banks, and then after some filter, we arrive with a final sample of more than 100 individual banks from 19 European countries. So among them, 38% are CTA adopters. More than 66% of the sample use the IRB approach. 43% of the banks are under the umbrella of the SSM and classified as a significant institution, and we cover relatively large banks. So we use several databases, and regarding the methodology, so we use a probability regression for the first hypothesis and a difference in differences approach for our second research question. So regarding the model, so the first one, the probability regression, so what is interesting here is the CT adoption variable. So it will take the value 1 for CT adopters in the year prior the adoption of the CTA, and it will be missing for the other years. And for CTA non-adopters, it will take the value 0 for the year prior the implementation of IFRS 9 to make sure that IFRS 9 is not going to play a role in our results. Here, the variable of interest for the first part of the first hypothesis will be IRB, where it takes the value 1 for banks that apply the IRB approach. Regarding the second research question, so we apply a definitive research design. And here we are interested in the coefficient beta 3, where it will take, basically, it will tell us whether the CT adopters, how they change their exposure to risk after the CT adoption. So we use three proxies for risk. So we use the total risk, which is the annualized standardized deviation of banks' returns. And for systematic risk and idiosyncratic risk, so we use the market model. So regarding the results, so first, we do find that banks with a higher proportion of loans and a lower capital ratio are more likely to adopt the CTA. And we also report that larger banks are more likely to opt for this CTA. I mean, those results are already in line with like regulatory constrained banks are more likely to opt for the CTA, which is something that we can expect. Indeed, banks with a higher proportion of loans will have to recognize a higher level of loan loss allowance because of the expected losses that will need to be recognized for stage one and stage two financial asset. And by definition, banks with a lower capital ratio are regulatory constrained banks. For H1A, so we do find that IRB banks are not more likely to opt for the CTA, but we find that IRB banks under the umbrella of the SSM are more likely to opt out the CTA. So we do believe that this result is due to the regulatory scrutiny over internal models that is going on for the SSM significant institution under the SSM umbrella. For H1B, we do find that banks characterized by tighter regulatory constraint under IFRS 9 are more likely to opt for the CTA. So we use the first variable, the DIF, which is the difference between the regulatory capital ratio and the leverage ratio, and a second proxy for regulatory constraints, which is the non-performing loans. So banks with higher non-performing loans are more likely to opt for the CTA. So this might be a result that is somehow we can expect this result because the CTA is there. It's there for those banks, those regulatory constrained banks. But it raises some red flags for the further analysis for our second research question is what do banks do after adopting the CTA? So we had also an additional analysis here because out there are a lot of paper saying that IRB banks usually engage aggressively in an opportunistic behavior. So we investigate whether those regulatory constrained IRB banks are more likely to opt for the CTA policy, but we do not find such result. So regarding the second research question, so we do find that CTA adopters decrease their exposure to systematic risk during the transitional period. So we can see this in the third column. However, we do not find any effect on idiosyncratic risk and total risk. So In the paper, we try to explain why we find a significant result for systematic risk and no result for total risk and idiosyncratic risk. And we do believe that under IFRS 9, so banks have incentive to decrease their exposure to systematic risk because the exposure to this particular risk affect banks' overall portfolio and can trigger a large recognition of loan impairment in case of an expected or not adverse economic situation. So here I'm referring to the cliff effect in loan impairment caused by the switch of an asset from stage one to stage two. But on the other hand, exposure to idiosyncratic risk is less likely to affect as much as the volatility of loan impairment. So for the last hypothesis, so we split the sample across the supervisory power. So here for the in panel A, so we proxy the supervisory power by using the official supervisory power index by Barth and al. 2013. So it captures the power of the national supervisor. And we do find that banks operating in a strong regulatory environment so decrease their exposure to systematic risk, which is not the case, or at least it's not significant for banks operating in a weak environment. So although we have banks that are under the umbrella of the single supervisory mechanism, we do believe that national authorities still have some residual power over those banks, especially because they have macroprudential power and can impose stricter prudential requirements to banks in the SSM. So not all banks are under the SSM first, and second, we do believe that national supervisory power, national competent authority still have some residual power on those banks. So yeah. We also split the sample across SSM banks, significant institution SSM banks, and other banks. And we do find again that under the SSM, that obviously is can be considered as a strong supervisory power, those banks tend to decrease their exposure to systematic risk. So we have a lot of alternative tests and robustness checks. So first, we use the dynamic conditional beta as a measure of systematic risk, and we do find that CTA adopters decrease their exposure to systematic risk using the dynamic conditional beta as a proxy for systematic risk. We also investigate whether CTA adopters decrease their exposure to tail risk using the long-run marginal expected shortfall. And we do report that CTA adopters also decrease their exposure to tail risk. Regarding robustness checks, so here we want to make sure that the result that we report, especially the one regarding the decrease in systematic risk exposure for CTA adopters, is kind of true. So we use several alternative market portfolio estimation procedure of the risk measure to control kind of to control for measurement error, and our result hold. We also use entropy balancing to make sure that differences in bank characteristic between CTA adopters and CTA non-adopter does not contribute to our result. It seems that our result holds also. We also test for the parallel trend assumption that underlie our diff-in-diff design. And again, it seems that the parallel trend is valid. And also to ensure that our results do not capture strategy shift in business model across CTA adopters and non-adopters unrelated to the CTA policy, but maybe to the IFRS 9. So we use an alternative control group that is not under that does not need to apply IFRS 9, namely insurance companies. And we do find again that CTA adopters decrease their exposure to systematic risks compared to this alternative control group. And finally, we do a permutation test to make sure that our result is not due by pure chance. And again, we do find evidence that banks do decrease, city adopters do decrease their exposure to systematic risk. So I will finish with two slides of conclusions. So first, we believe that we contribute to the banking literature by providing consistent evidence that IRB banks under the SSM are more likely to opt out of the CTA, and that might give two interesting results here. That first, the institutional context and more specifically the SSM kind of play a role in how advanced credit risk modeling are applied in the banking industry. I think that we address an interesting interplay between this mandatory application of IFRS 9 and the voluntary CTA choice. And also our study contributes to the literature by investigating the impact of the institutional context, and namely the power of the banking authority on bank opportunistic choices and risk taking. We do acknowledge some limits and caveats here. So for sure, we only focus on IFRS 9 and the CTA, while we somehow ignore the role and function of other regional and national regulators. Although we try to somehow investigate the effect of the national supervisory power, and we also tend to investigate the impact of the SSM. We also only consider the CTA as dummy variable without examining other CTA data, such as the magnitude of the actual transitional adjustment, which is disclosed under the Pillar 3 framework. We have some policy implication here. So first, non-IRB SSM European banks have signaled their inability to absorb a capital shock upon the application of the expected credit loss model under IFRS 9. And overall, this finding is supportive of the need of the transitional policy set out by the Basel Committee for Banking Supervision. Our result on the consequences of the CTA adoption on bank risk taking provide two main messages to policymakers. So first, the CTA policy in conjunction with IFRS 9 has significantly incentivized banks to decrease their exposure to systematic risk. And I think this is a super important result, that we find that banks decrease their regulatory constraint banks, right? The ones that the banks that believe that, I mean, there will be a capital shock, decrease their exposure to systematic risk, because I think this is the role of regulators to limit systematic risk in the banking industry. So, yeah. And also, we believe that our results show that more scrutiny over banks' activities should be prioritized for a CTA adopter operating in a weak supervisory environment, because it's not sure that they will reach the objective of being able to fully apply IFRS 9 at the end of the five-year transitional period. So we have some thought that might give rise to some discussion afterwards. So in general, our results support the view that special policy issued by bank regulator might help banks to adopt a significant accounting regulatory reforms, but this outcome is likely to be conditional of some institutional specificities. Finally, also, regulators could temporarily allow non-compliance with accounting rule to prevent instability in the banking center. And I think this argument goes back to the discussion that we had yesterday about IFRS 9. And because it's only temporary, it's not necessarily that banks will, like, again, do loan impairment too little, too late. That was in the argument. So I think I'm done with the time. I can see Gloria on the screen. So
well, yeah, you've got 15 seconds left if you want to use them.
So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward for the discussion now. Thank you.